You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Irirangi Pō, Radio Bosom.
The Wire.
2 days ago, on the 11th of November, the day was marked on which the average Kiwi woman starts to effectively work for free for the rest of the year, due to the gender pay gap. Rachel McIntosh, the Vice President of the Council of Trade Unions, says the gap is as such that it takes the average Kiwi man only 314 days to earn what it takes women 365 days to earn. I started by asking Rachel what evidence these findings were based on.
These are based on Department of Statistics information about average income of men and women.
I often find myself in conversations with men who say there is no reason to believe that pay equity is an issue in our country. And this is the kind of rhetoric that silences the problem. So do you think that this disbelief is part of the reason that there is still a gender gap in pay?
I do, yeah. I think that's denial. And there is clear evidence. And people who say, oh, it's because of women's choices and, oh, it's because women have children or whatever. Actually, the reason behind women's choices is one thing, is that what we are led to believe is suitable work for us. That's one of it. Another thing is that what we are led to believe is suitable work for us is valuable work that is undervalued. So that's another reason.
Right.
And the fact that women participate in the workforce, in the paid workforce, differently from men. That's a big issue for a society that wants to be equal. And so, for example, in Sweden, they have laws which pretty much require men to take parental leave, mm-hmm. and their gender pay gap is much smaller than ours. So there's all these kind of things. And they have done research which shows that even aside from all those things, a huge part of the gender pay gap is what they call unexplained. So that's, it can't be explained by empirical stuff. So the conclusion there is that that is basically discrimination, that yeah. women are likely to be put in lower paying jobs, likely where pay is not transparent. So in a lot of jobs in this country, the pay rates are not transparent and the pay scales are not transparent.
Right.
And so that's all private, and women tend to get started on lower rates than men, and then with percentage increases, the gap just gets bigger and bigger as they go throughout their career.
Right. Do you think also if we viewed pregnancy as less of a liability, that would aid the gender gap as well?
Absolutely. Some work that I've been doing with some of the state sector unions and the State Services Commission has been looking at principles that will end the discrimination, and one of them is looking at the relationship between paid and unpaid work, so exactly what you were saying,
mm-hmm.
And design work so that that doesn't disadvantage women workers.
And you also say in the press release how the problem is one that is within our grasp to solve and therefore requires active intervention. So do you think you could detail what this intervention looks like to you or might look like?
There is a law being passed at the moment which will make it easier for people to claim that they've suffered a pay inequity and okay. a pay injustice. So that's one thing. And so people can make submissions on that, can make submissions supporting that and make submissions on strengthening it. So that's one thing. And there are cases at the moment. So last year we had a huge historic settlement for care and support workers, which saw increases of up to 49% in the income of those people. And that was simply recognition that their skills were huge. And that required intervention. So the ETU, the union, took a case with Christine Bartlett, was the person at the forefront of that case. So mm-hmm. it was her case, but it affected in the end 50,000 people. Mm-hmm. And that's because when the court said yes, at every level, the court said, yes, there is discrimination here. Eventually, the government who funds that work stepped in and negotiated with the unions and with the employers a settlement that covers everybody. So that is pretty major intervention across a whole sector, and that is the kind of intervention that we need. We also need engagement, so genuine input from working people. Our view is that these things can only be solved by people getting organised and standing up. And it's only by getting organised that it will be sustainable. Because you can give somebody a pay jolt, and then if all the other things remain the same, like lack of transparency, like discrimination, like a lack of keeping an eye on it, those gains fall away. And so one of the principles is sustainability, and that requires basically vigilance.
You know, we're coming up to the end of the year, and start of a new year always kind of seems to provide an opportunity for people to say, especially business-wise, we're going to look at X, Y, and Z this year. What kind of main goals would you recommend that, like, small businesses, big businesses start taking on board as they go into the new year?
So I guess the starting place for employers would be to, number one, engage with their workforce, talk to the union. So that's the first step. But the aim should be to get rid of discrimination, to have a sustainable system that means that, first of all, they close the gap, and close the gap by increasing women's pay, not by decreasing men's pay, and that they have a system that means it's sustainable, which means that when they're hiring somebody, they understand what biases they need to get rid of. When they are having promotions, they need to understand what biases they need to get rid of. If they have an internal training scheme, that needs to be genuinely available. If promotions happen on the golf course and only the men go and play golf, they have to think about that and think of other ways of making informal connections. So it's quite a big and complex area, and I'd say the place to start is engage with the union.
For Māori and Pacific women, this day started 6 weeks ago. Do you think that specificity matters in how we target inequality?
Yeah, and you know, I'm a Pākehā woman, I don't want to speak for my sisters, but
sure.
I have been in a conversation where one of our Pacific leaders in the union movement said, Pacifica women need to define for ourselves what equal pay is. And she said, you know, our attitude to work is different from Pālangi attitude to work. So we have a different view. And so really, basically, what people like me need to do is get out of the way and make sure that that voice is heard, and that Pacifica women can come up with their own solutions. And so with Māori women. And I know that there is a Waitangi tribunal clan called Mana Wahine, which Māori women from several unions are involved in that. And that is looking at the historic, you know, treaty breaches that have led to Māori women being low paid. So there will be different ways of looking at it for different sectors. And it's really important that the average Pākehā woman who's now working for free understands that if I fix my problem, it's not going to fix everything because of the compounding effects for Māori and Pacific women.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.